It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, we have Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. And as I begin the program, just to remind you, look to that website, harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com. Or you can give them a call, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050. And with that introduction, good afternoon, Cecil. Good afternoon, Wes.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Lockwood. Lockwood, Wes is going to lead us off this afternoon with a conversation about mediation and what is it and when is it required. I think our listeners will be intrigued by some of the circumstances that Wes will describe. And just right out of the gate, Wes, mediation now is required, isn't it?
In most courts, yes, it is. It's not in small claims court and in district court, just normal civil cases. It's required in family law cases by statute in district court, but normal civil cases is not. Civil superior court, it's required in most cases. And in federal court, normally you enter what's called a discovery scheduling order that's going to indicate, you know, when the mediation is to take place. So the court expects mediation to take place before a trial in federal court as well. So, yes, it's in most cases, in most situations, when you find yourself in a lawsuit, whether it's you're the plaintiff or defendant or whatever it may be, in most of them, not all of them, but in most of them, the court is going to order that mediation takes place. So when we're talking about mediation and what it is, Cecil and Lockwood, it's really what it is. It's a part of like a subset of something we learn about as lawyers and that certain people specialize in as far as serving in the capacity of a mediator or arbitrator of ADR, which is alternative dispute resolution. So your typical dispute resolution situation is, well, you know, you just proceed forward with the case and you try the case and that's how it's resolved. But the time and the effort and the money and the uncertainty associated with, you know, trying a case, that can be avoided in the event that the case is resolved otherwise through mediation or arbitration. So when we say that the cases are ordered to mediation, that means that all of the parties are going to be required to attend this process of an attempt to settle the case. That's what that is. And sometimes our mediation processes are in person. Sometimes these days they're via Zoom. If we have parties across the country, then obviously that saves a lot of time and effort and money if we're doing it via Zoom. And then the master of ceremonies, so to speak, at the mediation is called a mediator. And either the parties agree on who the mediator would be, which is 95% of the time, the parties will agree on it, on who that person is, and that's who will be appointed. Or the court then appoints the mediator if the parties cannot agree, and then that gets scheduled. Normally a mediation is scheduled out many months in advance because most good mediators are pretty busy. Their calendar is pretty full, and therefore it takes time to, it takes a little bit of time to get on their schedule and to get the lawyer's schedules lined up, the party schedules lined up. But the way that the mediation works, and again, the person who's the mediator is not a judge they don't serve in a capacity of, all right, I'm going to wear the black robe and I've got the gavel and I'm going to listen to everybody at this mediation and I'm going to make a decision. That's not the way it works. The mediator is really a facilitator, the person who helps the parties communicate to work out a resolution of the case. Normally, a mediation is going to take place at an attorney's office, not in a courtroom or a courthouse. And the normal process for mediation is going to be that all of the parties, either by Zoom or in person, are going to all be together in one room at the beginning to do several things. Number one, for the mediator to go through his conversation with everyone regarding the mediation itself, the process, how it works, and to, you know, kind of give a framework for how we proceed, what it costs, you know, those type things. And then normally the plaintiff's attorney then is going to state his or her position. That's one of the few opportunities that the other side is going to be able to hear what the plaintiff's attorney says about their case. Because, you know, through a litigation, you can't pick up the phone and call the defendant and say, hey, you need to settle this case because you got all these problems. And you don't have any guarantee as to what their attorney may be communicating to them. So it's an opportunity to give your side of the way you think things are going to go. And then once the plaintiff's attorney has said what he or she needs to say about the case, then it flips over to the defendant's attorney, and the defendant's attorney then has the same opportunity. So that's a good opportunity for the parties to listen up and to see what the other side thinks. And it's also a good opportunity for the attorneys to listen up and see what the other side thinks for a couple of reasons. Number one, maybe there's something that's said in that opening statement, the mediation, that makes a difference about how far you're willing to go to settle the case. Mm-hmm. And in the event the case doesn't settle, maybe you learn something about the case through this opening statement or through the mediation that you can use at trial, or something that you can prepare for a trial, something maybe you didn't anticipate. You learn a little bit about how potentially the other side is going to present the case. So it's an opportunity, again, for all the parties to come together for this opening session to take place, as I just described. And then once that session takes place, if there's two parties, sometimes there's three or four, and sometimes there's a breakout into multiple rooms, but if there's two parties, to make it simple, the plaintiffs stay in one room with their attorney, the defendants go to another room privately with their attorney, and the mediator then goes back and forth between the rooms with offers and counteroffers in an attempt to reach a settlement of the case. Sometimes the mediation is a hour-long process. Sometimes it's a multi-day process.
Wow.
Normally in civil superior court, I'd say the shortest mediations are, you know, believe it or not, probably 3 or 4 hours, 3 hours. And the longer ones are all-day affairs, sometimes even reaching into, you know, maybe even, you know, 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, midnight sometimes. Just depends on, you know, the circumstances. So once that process is, you know, going forward, and in the event that the parties do come to a settlement of the case, normally it's going to be a settlement of every aspect of the case. That means that we're done. We're finished. We're not in court anymore. We don't have the risk of a jury making a decision for us. We don't have the risk of a judge entering a ruling on something that may gut our case that we didn't anticipate, whether right or wrong. So we take all the uncertainty out of the process. So once we, you know, get to that point, a mediated settlement agreement has been entered. That's normally a relatively short, sometimes it could be not short, but a relatively short in many cases, quickly typed or relatively quickly typed or relatively quickly handwritten mediated settlement agreement is then put on paper, and then the parties review it back and forth. They get it through their attorneys. They get it perfect. And it's going to set forth the basic tenets of what our settlement agreement is. And the parties are going to then sign that, and then that normally is then going to be put into a more formalized typewritten with all the bells and whistles settlement agreement and release within a matter of, you know, weeks.
During this, while you all are in these mediation and, you know, Lockwood, I, of course, you know, many times am in the office, and, you know, party A is in a certain area of the office, one conference room, and party B is in a wholly different area of the office in a separate conference room.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mediator will walk from party to party and from lawyer to lawyer. And then many times they're together in our very large conference room. But my question is this, Wes, as this unfolds throughout the day for you as a lawyer, I would think that you find out kind of a lot of information. It's an opportunity for you as the lawyer to really know what the other side, to hear firsthand what their positions are, and maybe even what documents they do have or don't have, what their expert may or may not say. Is this true? Is this an opportunity for you to really be able to size up the validity of the case from not only your perspective as the lawyer for our client, but also the lawyer on the opposing side?
No question about it. That we want to use this mediation process in every aspect of the case that we can, not just solely for settlement. And what I mean by that is that, you know, I go into CECL mediation sometimes with my clients, and I advise them that, okay, this is where we are regarding our case, but we have a real problem with the case that may gut our case completely. And this is what that problem is. Okay, whatever it may be. But I'm not sure that the other side knows about it.
Mm-hmm.
They may not be analyzing this the way I am.
Right.
They may not understand how the law works with regard to this situation, this particular situation. They may not know about this piece of evidence. Okay, so client's day is going to be very telling for us, because we have a really good case except for this one thing. And the defense absolutely is going to use this one thing in order to settle this case for pennies on the dollar if they know about it. And therefore, they will bring it up at mediation if they know about it.
Uh-huh.
So let's see if they know about this, and that will make a huge difference in how we analyze the case at mediation and how we analyze the case going forward for trial. So a lot of times, you know, that doesn't happen all the time. You don't always have the silver bullet you're worried about. But that has certainly happened before. In cases that we've dealt with at Harvell and Collins, I go into mediations with eyes wide open. I don't go into a mediation thinking, well, I know everything about this case, and they can't tell me anything that I don't know, so they're either going to settle it or not. No, I don't go into a mediation like that. I go into a mediation like a sponge. I'm listening to everything, because you don't file a case. You don't proceed with litigation for the sole purpose of trying to settle, in my opinion. That doesn't bode well for your client. I think as an attorney, it doesn't help you very much either, because if you develop a reputation of someone who wants to just settle everything, you're going to get, you're going to end up in a situation where you're not going to be able to get good results for your client because you're going to have a reputation of weakness. Everything I file, every lawsuit I'm involved in, as on the plaintiff side, it's my plan to prepare the case to so we actually try it before a jury. So I'm never, you know, going into a mediation with a sense of comfort, knowing that, oh, I'm never going to try this case anyway. Obviously, going through this part of the litigation, the mediation itself, is can be very, very helpful to teach me things about the case that I would not otherwise have the opportunity to know about, things that the other side may say, things that may be mentioned to the mediator that the mediator then brings into our room, that type of thing. Now, as far as communicating with the mediator, that's an interesting dynamic because the mediator can use anything that you tell him or her in the other room, unless you tell them not to. Anything you communicate, and let me kind of lay this, place the table here a little bit on this for folks. A lot of times when the mediator comes into one of the rooms in mediation, you know, this is not as though there's a 2-minute conversation, you know, hey, we'll offer $10,000 and that's it. Usually these conversations with the mediator can last 30 minutes, 20 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour. I mean, I've been sitting for probably 3 hours before waiting for, or maybe even longer, for the mediator to finish talking with the other room. So depending on what kind of case it is, depending on all the dynamics, so on and so forth, it could be an information session that the mediator is receiving when they either walk in our room or they walk into the other room. So anything you communicate to the mediator, he or she can use that and communicate it to the other side unless you tell them not to. So it is oftentimes where there are things that I let the mediator know and I specifically indicate, I want you to know this because it may help you to have it in your brain. I do not want you to communicate this to the other side. Okay, because, you know, there may be things that hurt my client's case that I want to put out there so the mediator knows that we acknowledge these things, but the other side might not know about those things. So we have to be careful in those communications. Now, as far as the communications in total, in the event that the case does not settle, any aspect of the mediation is going to be cannot be considered at trial. Like, you can't get to trial and the other side say, well, they want X amount now, but they wanted X amount at mediation. Mm-hmm. Okay, they can't talk about that. That's all confidential stuff. Okay, so that puts us in a position where we are free to negotiate based on public policy to try to reach a resolution without fear of our offers or demands or communications being used against us.
I guess you
at a later date. So mediation is absolutely a very useful tool. A good percentage of cases do get settled at mediation. Recognize that in most cases, mediation does not take place until we've already done a fair amount of discovery. So we've gotten written discovery requests and responses, and we may have likely have taken depositions. We may have already gone through summary judgment motions, or that could be coming up. So there's pressure on the mediation because summary judgment costs time. Costs money, takes time, and could end up gutting the case. So it's not as though you file a lawsuit on day one or on day two, you go mediate. A lot of times there's some effort that goes into seeing where we are with the case before the mediation takes place. So Very helpful. There's, I would say, in this area primarily, there's three or four, maybe five mediators that are the main ones that you end up, that most people end up using. In the domestic arena, there's a handful of mediators that are the main ones that are used in the civil superior court, and there's the main ones that are used. And, you know, when you're ready to set up the mediation, if both parties agree on a particular mediator, you just, of course, you know, reach out to their office and get on their calendar, and you're kind of working toward that date. Now, another aspect of the alternative dispute resolution is arbitration. I'll just hit on this pretty briefly. But arbitration is different than mediation because, as I spoke about, mediation is an opportunity for the parties to come together to settle the case by agreement. And arbitration is going to be a situation where instead of a jury, or it could be a judge, but instead of a jury in most cases making a decision on the case, a arbitrator, who is an attorney in most cases, is going to make a decision on the case. Or it could be a panel of three arbitrators. So you basically have a trial. The rules of evidence are, in most cases, relaxed. but you do put on evidence. You do put on witnesses. You do put on exhibits. It's normally not done in a courtroom. It's normally at an attorney's office. The arbitrator hears the evidence, considers all of it, and then enters his or her award, determining, you know, what the final resolution is. There is binding arbitration. That means that whatever the arbitrator does, you're done. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's non-binding arbitration, which then has a component to appeal the decision, which seems a little bit counterproductive, because the purpose of arbitration is to reach a quicker and cheaper resolution than that afforded by a jury trial. So what kind of cases end up in arbitration? Well, there could be cases where the parties agree to arbitrate it. I normally don't like to do that. I would rather have a jury trial as opposed to an arbitrator in many cases. Or you can have an arbitration in like a breach of contract type case, where the contract that is central to the lawsuit could be an employment contract, could be a, you know, commercial goods contract of some sort, and a breach. If it has an arbitration clause in it, then either party can trigger that arbitration clause, mm-hmm. and therefore the case. It may be filed in court, but if any party raises the arbitration clause as a defense, then the court will enter an order staying the case and ordering arbitration. So that's under the contract. And so you again, determine who the arbitrator is going to be, set the hearing date, work toward the hearing date, and then, you know, you're preparing, you know, for the actual trial or the arbitration itself. But that one is like I said, a black robe type situation where the person who's serving as arbitrator has the authority and the obligation to make a final determination on the case. So it is, it's not a let's get together and see if we can resolve this through a mediation process. It is a, you know, somewhat of a less formal trial procedure where the arbitrator makes a final determination.
Wes, a couple of questions for you before we wrap things up here. And we're talking with Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins, and Cecil asked an interesting question about the whole process of mediation. And I've got two questions for you. And again, we're talking with Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell, but Wes today on the issue of mediation, and this is at Harvell and Collins. And to remind you, that number, 252 area code 726-9050. Wes, a first question has to do with evidence. In the case of a mediation, is there evidence presented at that initial meeting with all of the parties in the conference room? I'll just use that as an example. Is there any kind of evidence that's presented at that point?
Yes, there can be. That's a case-by-case situation.
Okay.
You can have a PowerPoint if you want to use a PowerPoint.
Okay.
You can have use a projector to put photographs or documents, you know, on the wall or on the computer for folks to see, whether it be a TV in the conference room or whatever it may be. You may do that if you wish. You don't have to do that. That's up to you. Or you can just, verbally go through what the case is about.
Okay.
And that is sufficient. Or you can say nothing. If a plaintiff or defendant's counsel chooses to make no statement whatsoever, that's their choice. Now, they don't have to say anything, but they have to participate, meaning they have to be there.
Okay. And the other question goes to the background of the mediator. This sounds like an extremely active effort. Obviously, someone who has some knowledge. What is the normal requirement for being a mediator?
Being an attorney and going through a course. Most mediators also do continuing legal education in alternative dispute resolution. The course itself and the certification as a mediator requires attendance of a certain amount of mediations during the time that you're going through that process. I would say that the two mediators I use most often, one of which is his office is in Mewburn, and that's all he does now as far as his practice goes. He manages the office, his law firm, because there's multi-attorney law firm. But as far as his actual practice goes, he serves as mediator in like every single day. I mean, if you were to contact his office and look for a date to mediate a case, you're out 4 or 5 months probably.
Wow.
Very, 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 very busy and very good. He's very good. He understands, every kind of case, basically. He's going to give you, he's a very engaging mediator, which is what you want.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want someone to just show up and say, hey, guys, what do y'all want to do? You want someone who's engaged, who's going to push on each room to make them, move.
Right.
The other mediator I used is, he's a little older. His office is in Rocky Mount, but he has a property in Emerald Isle. So it kind of works out well that he likes to come to his place in Emerald Isle, and we work right. And so he travels down here so he can stay there and spend a little time at the beach. He's more in, he's not retired, but he's more in retirement years.
Right, right.
I hope he's not listening. He might not like that comment.
No, but I understand.
he's equally as good, very engaging, very smart. And so both of them are kind of my go-tos, but I certainly use other folks as well.
Right.
Lockwood,
yeah.
Just to kind of give this some ending, an end perspective.
Uh-huh.
When I first started practicing law, this was not a requirement in the superior courts of North Carolina. The legislature had not passed the statutes that require mediation. Now, of course, as Wes has been explaining, it is required. This is serious business, Lockwood, and we're touching on that with these mediators who take this very seriously. They are well-educated in the art of mediation. They attend continuing education specifically to that art. They usually are practicing lawyers with a lot of experience who have now turned to this particular tool of the trade, if you will, called mediation. And And I'm glad we talked about it today. It's a very integral part of a litigation file. And, there are a lot of details, Lockwood, as we've discussed in the radio program many times, relative to litigation files. But one aspect that absolutely needed to be addressed is this issue of mediation and the way in which that helps our clients.
Well, and also for the audience to understand the difference of, the concept of alternative dispute resolution, but also the fact that there's so much to be gained by contacting a good law firm. And I'm going to say unequivocally, the good law firm is Harvell and Collins. And I don't mean that to be flippant. I meant that seriously. As we just heard a few moments ago from Wes Collins, all that's involved in just the concept of mediation. If you want to find out more, if you want to get good recommendations, you want to get good advice, don't hesitate to give them a call. The number, 252 area code 726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and. HarvellandCollins.com. And with that, Cecil, Wes, thanks very much for a great program.
Thank you, Lockwood.